This is a podcast from WGBH Radio Boston. Hear more at wgbh.org/classical.
Hello, podcast listeners. This is Michelle Sweet, producer of Classical Connections. The 1780s in Vienna was the height of the classical era in music. But what was the music scene going on in America at that time? To find out, we hear from New England early music historian Nim Cook on Classical Connections.
I've always been moved by how Mozart's little life is included exactly in Haydn's. Haydn's 24 when Mozart is born. Then he sees this meteor of a composer just rising in the heavens and plays quartets with him. They're great friends, you know, and then Mozart dies and Haydn goes on for another 18 years. But William Billings' life is exactly in between the two of them. He's active in exactly the same decade, the 1780s, that they're sort of reaching their peaks. And what's going on with Billings over in Massachusetts is so different. You know, it's a totally different world.
Music historian Nim Cook specializes in early New England sacred music.
Billings was quite a colorful character.
William Billings had just one eye. One arm and one leg were shorter than the other, and he apparently had a harsh and unpleasant voice. He was constantly chewing, spitting, and snuffing tobacco, and he was a tanner by trade, which left him with a stained and disheveled appearance. As for how he dealt with people, well, let's just say unrefined is where the descriptions began.
He also worked various odd jobs in Boston at the time. One of the most colorful jobs that Billings worked was that of hog reeve. The hog reeve was charged with collecting stray swine from the streets of Boston. So it was a pretty funky existence that Billings had in the secular world. But he was an inspired composer and actually writer of prose.
Billings was born in Boston in 1746. But several decades prior to that, a musical crisis of sorts had been brewing in New England congregational churches.
The congregational singing in New England had apparently declined to a terrible state by around 1720. There was a general uproar about this among ministers and people of the churches, saying that we're not praising God in any kind of a proper way if we're bawling out these psalm tunes in our worship services. So the singing school is established in Boston around 1720. The idea was that kids would attend these singing school sessions for a period of, 3 weeks to maybe even 3 months at a time, a couple of sessions a week, and then they would take those skills back to the pews in the meeting house and sit with their families again and improve the quality of the singing through this.
Lord, when thou didst ascend on high.
But what happened was, and this is one of the ironies of our early American musical history, these young people, whose median age was just about 17, older teenagers, and they started agitating to sit together in the meeting house as a choir. And I don't know how they managed to gain approval of this, but they did eventually. In the 1760s, the supply of music starts to run a bit low. They've been through all of the contemporaneous English tune books. They've sung all of their favorites from those sources. And they start agitating for new music to be written.
Which is where Billings comes in. And in his downtime, when he wasn't tanning leather or chasing hogs, he actually managed to write about 300 pieces.
And when Billings' first collection of original music came out in 1770, it was titled The New England Psalm Singer, and it had an illustration opposite the title page engraved by P. Revere, a picture of six guys, I think, sitting around a table and singing. That was a collection of, I think, 127 pieces by Billings, including some really marvelous music. So Billings is very much a character of the Boston scene. He lives his whole life there, rarely left Boston. He didn't travel around the countryside teaching singing schools to the degree that the myth of Billings states. But most of the time, he had plenty to do in Boston, chasing hogs and writing music. But, I mean, he was clearly just a live wire, you know, a total original in his personality. And, you know, he wrote gorgeous melodies. He also composed a piece, Chester, which has a text by him and also music, that became a sort of anthem for the Revolutionary War. Let tyrants shake their iron rod and slavery clank her galling chains. We fear them not. We'll trust in God. New England's God forever reigns. It's a patriotic statement saying, you know, we believe in God, but our God is New England's God. We have our own religion and we want to have our own government. This song came out in 1770. The year of the Boston Massacre, 6 years before the Declaration of Independence. So it's an early declaration of independence, of religious and musical and cultural independence.
Music historian Nim Cook on colonial composer William Billings. Next week, we'll have more from Cook, this time about Timothy Swan. I'm Brian McCreath for Classical Connections.
Classical Connections is produced by me, Michelle Sweet, at WGBH Radio and made possible by an NEA American Masterpieces grant through the Massachusetts Cultural Council. WGBH also has another great podcast that features live performances from our Fraser Performance Studio right here at WGBH. It's the Classical Performances Podcast, hosted by Alan McClellan. You can find it at wgbh.org/classical, and go there to check out other classical music offerings that we have from WGBH Boston. That's all at wgbh.org/classical. Thanks for listening.